nothing severe has been actually incurred on their, I guess, operations. At the same time, one of the organizations, or should I say entities, that is not really highlighted that much is nuclear organizations within the U.S., if there's truth to that, to have been affected.
Well, you're right in that we really just simply do not know exactly who is affected. Really, we don't know the basic five W's that any sort of journalistic endeavor is supposed to encompass: the who, the what, the why, the where, the when. None of this information has really been published by any of the reports that have come out so far. Much of it is largely speculative, almost entirely sourced to quote-unquote unnamed intelligence officials, people familiar with the matter. This sort of language is the type that's being employed to source this story. So we simply do not know, in great part, really, who exactly has been affected, nor do we know for sure who was behind it. All of the sources, again, on this are people coming from the Department of the Defense, from the CIA, from the NSA, organizations who would have an incentive. And indeed, we know that the CIA actually does possess the capability of spoofing its own attacks to make them seem as though they're coming from other countries, other organizations. It's likely they're not the only only organization with access to this kind of technology. So really, the most basic variables of this story are simply not known. And, you know, I think that that will likely be the case going forward, but I would be happy to be proven wrong.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Wyatt Reed, our correspondent there, talking to us from Washington, D.C. Mike Billington is from the Executive Intelligence Review, who joins us from Hamilton, Virginia. Maybe he can shed some light on this and give us his analysis. Mike Billington, welcome. So our correspondent there has said that it's not quite clear yet the depth of the hack. Perhaps you can tell us about that and how this actually may have happened, because we're also looking at a duration of time from 10 months ago, based on some reports, that the hack began, and we're just hearing about it now.
I can't tell you the depth of it. I think your previous fellow is right, that they really don't know the extent of this. But I think what's clear, what is known, is that we're seeing another case of what Donald Trump correctly says is Russia, 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 fake news. There's no evidence, none whatsoever has been presented, just as there has been no evidence presented over these last 4 years of the claims by the Obama and Bush intelligence circles and their British friends about the collusion between Russia and Trump, or Russia at all, not even with Trump, in the 2016 election. There's no evidence, there's no proof. The Russians have very clearly ridiculed it as typical jokes. And you may or may not know Bill Binney, who is a very close friend of our LaRusha organization and appears with us regularly on our programs, who was the head of the technical division at the NSA, who actually developed the Thin Thread program, which was designed to root out terrorist acts, but was then misused by the NSA to set up the most massive mass surveillance in the history of the human race. Still the case that the U.S., while it's screaming and yelling about China having a surveillance economy, has the most massive surveillance capacities in history. And as your previous spokesman said, the what was called the marble framework part of the system that was set up and which Snowden revealed has the capacity to put fake source material in a leak in order to make it appear to come from Russia or Iran or China or anybody else. So this is known. I would say that probably the best proof that this is not Russia was that Adam Schiff, I hope you remember who Adam Schiff is. He's the member of the U.S. Intelligence Committee in the House, who for the last 4 years has said, I have absolute proof that Russia interfered in the 2016 election and fixed it for Donald Trump. And of course, he had no such evidence, any more than the U.S. had evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when we decided to criminally and illegally destroy that country. This has now become common from this intelligence community. Trump actually took some major steps to try to rein this in, but he's only been partially successful. And we're now dealing with another Russia hoax, whose purpose is to set the stage for the Biden administration, if he gets in, which he may not, but he may, to be prepared for what they, in fact, were moving on during the Obama-Biden time, which was to prepare for war against Russia and China.
Okay. Let me bring in our guest, Vladimir Sutnikov, from Moscow. He's a strategic analyst from the Russian Academy of Sciences. Vladimir Sutnikov, welcome. So let me get first your reaction of how the U.S. Secretary of State was pretty sure, as he said, that Russia was behind it. Donald Trump said no in so many words and pointed the finger of blame at China. And our guest there has said that there is no proof that Russia was behind this. So first, your reaction to this.
My reaction, actually, this is a very good question. My reaction is it's absolutely rubbish. You know, Russia has nothing to do, and Russia just formally rejected these allegations and accusations of interfering by hackers hacking the U.S. governmental, some U.S. governmental institutions and agencies. And this is absolutely rubbish, because neither China nor Russia has nothing to do with this. What actually could be possible that once some a certain non-state actor, and if you remember the ISIS activities back, two, three years ago, there were a lot of young, sophisticated, bright computer specialists, computer engineers from Western Europe, who came for big money to ISIS stronghold in Syria to work for ISIS, being paid huge money. And I'm not claiming that this is ISIS, but any possible non-state actor, any possible radical Islamist organization could be standing behind this and could making the hacking attack by these computer scientists who actually probably stayed with them and tried to penetrate the U.S. governmental agencies, CIA, FBI, some NGOs in the United States, some think tanks. So this is probably like this. This is my first feeling, which actually I felt when I heard this news for the first time. And I think that the United States simply doesn't have any strong proof of any interference, neither Trump about China, nor Biden president-elect team, nor even State Secretary Pompeo, who actually claimed that Russia is accused by the United States of cyber attacks against U.S. Agencies.
Okay.
So that is my feeling.
Well, Mike Billington, to go along with what you have said, first of all, before we continue here, let me make sure that we, at least I know from you, Mike Billington, what your views are. I mean, do you believe that the U.S. was hacked, the different agencies that were involved?
Question. I think Mr. Sutnikov could very well be right that this is a non-state actor. We don't know because, of course, there's nothing being revealed about this. In fact, the person who was in charge for Homeland Security of our cybersecurity, this guy Chris Krebs, who lied and said there was the current election, the presidential election, was clean, there was no fraud, obvious lie, and Trump fired him. He's now running around ranting that this is Russia. And if in fact it were, then he certainly didn't do his job. But I think the other thing, the other possibility at least, that Mr. Sobokov would probably agree, is what your question implied, which is that this might not even be a serious breach. This might be an artificial breach run by the CIA. They have the capacity, as Mr. Binney exposed in his multiple studies of this, showing, for instance, that there was no hacking of the DNC computers, which was the basis of the entire Russiagate hoax, that in fact it was a download, that it's very possible that this is itself a hoax, a fraud, that the massive hacking may not even be true. In order to create a new Russiagate hoax to go along with the Chinagate hoax that's been perpetrated by Pompeo and the other radical lunatics in the Trump administration. But this is very possibly meant to set up a next administration if they succeed in getting Biden in, which they may or may not. There's still a very, very serious potential for overthrowing this fake election, the massive vote fraud that's already been exposed and never listened to in court. No court has heard the evidence. Every court has ruled that they don't have standing to protest this, which is why Trump himself brought the case to the Supreme Court yesterday. So this is all in the works, trying to prepare for Biden, who's already announced that he's hired plans to hire a Secretary of State whose only complaint about the Obama-Biden administration was that they didn't fully invade and destroy Syria the way they did Libya. And you can expect that will happen if you get the war party back in power. That the reason they had to get Trump out was because he's insisted on pulling out of these regime change wars, and they want to restore, in the midst of this massive global financial breakdown crisis taking place, only partially because of the pandemic.
Right.
It was already in the works. But in the midst of this, they cannot allow Trump to work with Putin, as he's insisted he should, and to end these endless wars. So they therefore put absolutely everything they had into trying to bring down Donald Trump personally.
Vladimir Sotnikov, the timing of this is something also that is somewhat interesting. And in terms of what the U.S. administration, if, as our guest said, the president-elect Biden gets elected to come into the White House, the chief of staff, of the incoming White House chief of staff has said that President-elect Joe Biden's response to this will go beyond sanctions against Russia. So if that is the case, what type of reactions may we see if and when Joe Biden comes into the White House against Russia?
Yeah. Well, actually, thinking about that in the retrospective, actually, that you remember that President-elect Joseph Biden actually promised in his election campaign that he will significantly try to get the relations between the U.S. and Russia better. So you are right. The timing is very interesting because in a month or so, there will be a solemn oath of President-elect Biden on the 20th of January, and the new administration came to life. So I think my analysis is that Biden is not going to significantly get the relations between the United States better, because for two simple reasons. First of all, some circles in the United States, right, influential circles, right, like the military-industrial complex, some hoaxes in the U.S. Senate, in the Congress, and some influential businessmen won't let Biden, who probably actually won the elections on their money and on their support, to move ahead with the improving the U.S.-Russia relations. And the second reason, a simple reason too, is that we actually evidencing right now, we're witnessing the new Cold War. And I agree with my American colleague that this Russiagate hoax, Chinagate hoax, or whoever gate hoax, they won't let the new administration to improve the relations with Russia. So that means that the election promises of Joseph Biden wouldn't be coming true.
Okay, Mike.
Unfortunately, this is my analysis. This is my forecast.
So, Mike Billington, let's go along with that line. What can we expect from Joe Biden, again, if he is successful in coming into the White House? What type of approach may he want to pursue with Russia, and what will happen if the aggressive stance against Russia, as it sounds like from Joe Biden's response so far to this hacking campaign, is that a window of how he will be treating Russia in the future?
You have to look at this from above, not from below. If you have a Biden administration, we're facing a global holocaust, and I mean a holocaust. The World Food Program has already warned that we could have 270 million deaths in Africa from starvation, not just from the COVID, but from starvation. We will watch the Biden team not only rejoin the Paris climate change hoax, but implement what they call green finance, the intentional cutting off of credit, and this is what's been organized by the Bank of England chief and his cohorts, a cutting off of credit that to all, not only fossil fuels, but to any industry that has a so-called carbon footprint based on the lie that carbon has something to do with climate change. We're looking at a global holocaust that will make anything in history pale by significance. And the war danger is simply aggravated by this global pandemic, financial breakdown crisis, threatening war danger, and so forth. So you have to do everything in your power to help expose the stealing of this election by the war party that supported Biden and by the British, who, as I'm sure you know, the House of Lords wrote years ago that everything possible must be done to prevent Trump from having a second term and doing what he threatens to do, which is to be friends with Russia, which he said was a good thing. And same similarly with China, where he was working with Xi Jinping until he fell for this foolish idea that he should blame them for the pandemic. But other than that, we had the potential of breaking up this British division of the world between the East and the West and bringing the U.S. and Russia and China together in a way that could end terrorism. It could reestablish the Bretton Woods financial system.
Okay.
These are still possible, but it must be done soon. And by the way, I think the potential of Trump pardoning Assange and Snowden and bringing that truth forth to the American people and to the world is the best chance we have of breaking up the vote fraud and actually turning the situation around in the U.S., which is extremely dangerous without doing something like that kind of a flanking operation.
Well, we'll find that out in due time. Okay. It seems like that's the end of the debate. Let me thank our guests. We have Vladimir Sotnikov, who's a strategic analyst from the Russian Academy of Sciences.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. And from the Executive Intelligence Review, Mike Billington, thank you for your comments. And that does it for this edition of the debate. For Mika Vitale, entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds. that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent and the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
How many a city did we destroy while it was committing wrong? So it has now fallen into ruin. And how many an abandoned well, and how many a lofty palace.
Now we're into the 45th verse of the chapter. فَكَأَيِّمْ مِنْ قَرْيَةٍ أَهْلَكْنَاهَا وَهِيَ ظَالِمَةٌ فَهِيَ خَاوِيَةٌ عَلَىٰ عُرُوشِهَا وَبِئْرٍ مُعَطَّلَةٍ وَقَصْرٍ مَشِيدٍ. So how many of the townships we did destroy while they were unjust, and their walls have fallen down over their roofs, and how many a well-abandoned and even lofty castles ruined. Dear listeners, so you may have been with us in the previous program. In the previous verse, the punishment of Allah was referred to in a general manner, and now it has been explained widely in this verse. So at first it says, فَكَأَيِّن مِنْ قَرْيَةٍ أَهْلَكْنَاهَا. So how many of townships we did destroy, وَهِيَ ظَالِمَةٌ, while they were unjust. So the reason why the Almighty Allah destroyed those townships is that they were unjust. So this is the result of being unjust, being removed from the surface of the earth. This is the outcome. Anyway, as the verse says, فَكَأَيِّن مِنْ قَرْيَةٍ, it's somehow implying that you should note and you should understand, you should take lessons from the previous happenings on the ground. You should use the history of the nations as admonition for you. So, Allah's wrath upon the unjust and oppressors is not an event. It's not a very single happening. It is a course, and it continues. When the punishment of Allah comes forth, there will resist neither any ceilings nor any pillars in the buildings. So, فَكَأَيِّمْ مِنْ قَرْيَةٍ أَهْلَكْنَاهَا وَهِيَ ظَالِمَةٌ. So how many of townships we did destroy while they were unjust? فَهِيَ خَاوِيَةٌ عَلَىٰ عُرُوشِهَا. And they have fallen down over their roofs. The Quranic word خَاوِيَة is derived from خَوَى, which means to fall ruin. And the word مَشِيد, وَبِئْرٍ مُعَطَّلَةٍ وَقَصْرٍ مَشِيدٍ, as the ending part of the verse says, means both a lofty castle and a kind of somehow stucco-plastered castle. So the verse says that the intensity of the event was so serious that at first the roofs fell down and then the walls of the building fell down over the roofs. Then the verse continues implying that there were many good wells with enough water that remained useless, and the owners of which were annihilated, and their water sank into the earth. Neither the water was pulled out, nor could any thirsty one be satiated with it. It says, وَبِئِرٍ مُعَطَّلَةٍ, and how many a well abandoned. And there were also so many splendid castles and very high buildings with beautiful stucco plaster ornaments which ruined, and their owners perished.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
The holy verse hinting this fact continues saying, وَقَصْرِ مَشِيد, and lofty castles, means they were also ruined. So both their beautiful and firm residences remained ownerless, and the sources of water which caused their lands to be flourishing vanished. It is noteworthy that some Islamic traditions narrated from the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam indicate that the phrase وَبِئْرٍ مُعَطَّلَةٍ and well abandoned has been rendered into the scholars and learned men who have been left alone in the society, and no one takes any benefit from their knowledge. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far alayhi salam, upon the commentary of the last sentence of this verse, said that the well abandoned, which is not taken benefit from, is the silent imam, and the lofty castle is the rational imam. This commentary, in fact, is a kind of simile, and it means that when Imam alayhi salam is settled in the governmental position, he is like a firm high castle that attracts the eyes from near and far distances, and he is acting as a shelter for all. But when he alayhi salam is kept aloof from the position of government and from the people in a manner that some evildoers occupy his position, he is like a well full of water which has been left forgotten. Neither the thirsty people enjoy it, nor are the trees, plants, and tilths watered by it. That's it for the discussion of this program about this holy verse. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Around the world with reporters.
The Austrian government announces a third hard lockdown starting immediately after Christmas on the 26th of December. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz had promised that the second lockdown, which ended 2 weeks ago, would save Christmas, but that mission has proven to be nearly impossible. Like the majority of nations around the world, Austrians are not expecting a regular Christmas or New Year's Eve. But things don't look entirely bleak, as vaccinations are set to begin across Europe and Austria on the 27th of December. With every week, says Chancellor Kurz, we get a step closer to ending this pandemic.
Measures will become stricter until the seven-day incident is below 100, and in mid-January there will be free mass tests for everyone who wants to take part.
The goal is to keep weekly cases below 100 per 100,000 people. That number currently stands at just under 200. The lockdown is expected to end on January 18th, but only for those who agree to get tested. For those not willing to take the test, the stay-at-home order and curfew will be in place for another extra week. Health Minister Rudolf Anschober expressed concern over the dramatic increase in mortalities across the country over the last 2 months.
With no further measures, at the end of the month, new cases could range between 1,300 and 3,000 cases a day.
For now, the new restrictions mean everyone entering Austria from abroad has to go into a 10-day quarantine, which can only be cut short after 5 days with a negative PCR or antigen test.
Over the Christmas holidays, more contacts and therefore more cases are expected, and the latest preventive measures announced by the government are meant to bridge the time until the vaccine can be rolled out in the new year. Homolezki, Vienna.
The coronavirus pandemic has worsened the dire economic conditions in the blockaded Gaza Strip, leaving a huge impact on the livelihoods of people in the tiny coastal enclave. The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has already caused a sharp decline in the standards of living, as well as alarming levels of unemployment and poverty in the seaside sliver even before the pandemic. Meanwhile, tight lockdown measures to contain COVID-19 have had grave economic implications on all sectors in the Gaza Strip. Experts say the coronavirus pandemic has brought the blockaded enclave's economy to a virtual standstill, driving more Palestinians into poverty.
Economy is a vital lifeline, and the Israeli blockade has crippled this lifeline. The coronavirus restrictions have only worsened the situation. Currently, around 85% of the population live below the poverty line, with an average income of only $2 a day.
Lockdowns are directly affecting thousands of daily wage laborers and their dependents, and resulting in suspension of operations in the vast majority of businesses in the Gaza Strip. The coronavirus pandemic has added to the substantial financial strain already felt by many families living in the Gaza Strip.
The coronavirus pandemic has affected economies all over the world. In Gaza, we're suffering the most amid this pandemic because of the ongoing blockade and the lack of resources.
The economy is in a very bad shape, especially during lockdowns, and shops and restaurants are closed. Many businesses had to lay off workers because they can't pay their wages.
The Gaza Strip has logged more than 33,000 coronavirus infections since late August. In an attempt to curb the rapid spread of the deadly virus, local authorities currently impose lockdowns from 6 p.m. until 7 a.m. and a complete curfew on Fridays and Saturdays.
We have imposed lockdowns as part of our preventive measures to slow the spread of the deadly virus. The Ministry of Interior is sparing no effort to minimize the number of coronavirus cases. The number of infections in the Gaza Strip is very high, and we are trying different approaches to contain the virus.
Experts say the pandemic will exacerbate the underlying humanitarian crisis that has gripped Gaza for years.
The COVID-19 pandemic is adding extra strains on Gaza's ailing economy. All economic sectors in the impoverished enclave are already suffering because of the Israeli blockade and multiple wars. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A nationwide car protest of the Spanish education reform reached Barcelona as the country grappled with a coronavirus pandemic. The procession, organized by a group advocating bilingual teaching in Catalonia, blocked traffic to draw attention to a law that will eliminate Spanish as a vehicular language in education. The reform, known as the Celà law, in reference to Spain's education minister Isabel Celà, was approved by a majority of left-leaning lawmakers in Spain's Congress of Deputies in November. It was hailed as a major breakthrough in promoting equal opportunity in public and concerted schools, increasing funding and access to scholarships, and ending sex segregation. But the main bone of contention is the future of Spanish as a common language across the 17 autonomous regions.
The deadlock over school reform takes special significance here in Catalonia, where the pro-independence movement has been gathering pace. Although Spanish is not the main language in most schools in this autonomous region, opponents of the reform say that consecrating a law that scraps Spanish as the common language ends their hopes for equality and emboldens the separatists.
We want to be free to pick the language that better suits our children in school. We've had enough with the language imposition. They do not allow us to speak Spanish here, or our kids are prohibited from learning in their mother tongue, which is Spanish.
On Thursday, Catalonia's Superior Court of Justice stepped in the debate, arguing that the teaching of Spanish in the region remains, quote, residual, and it urged authorities to teach a minimum 25% of the curriculum in Spanish, in addition to Spanish class. Education officials in Catalonia denounced the move as a breach of regional competencies and vowed to appeal to Spain's higher court.
The regional authorities in Catalonia have long disregarded court rulings. They've always been quick at trampling our freedom as citizens.
Spain's Conservative People's Party, center-right Ciudadanos, and far-right party Vox have so far failed to slow-walk the bill in its journey to final approval in the Senate. Gusay Kedrit, Barcelona.
Being in Pakistan, their hearts are with you.
He's a Noor Dari, a man of Pakistani origin. He's heading a London-based anti-Muslim think tank, Islamic Theology of Counter-Terrorism. Dari is suspected to be sponsored by apartheid state of Israel. Dari, who left Pakistan almost 20 years ago, has been now at the center stage of what Islamabad says, a lingering disinformation campaign propagating that Pakistan is getting ready to normalize ties with Israel.
Pakistan government, they want to establish a relationship with Israel. This is the reason they sent a delegation, and not only the one person, a couple of persons, including the advisor of the prime minister. They flew from the London to Tel Aviv.
The claim was immediately dismissed by Pakistani prime minister as baseless.
Why would our delegation visit Israel when we have a policy not to recognize Israel? It is clearly a fake news. In a democratic society like ours, it is unacceptable to normalize ties with Israel because our entire nation stands by Palestinians.
Pakistan has been reportedly under intense pressure from the UAE and Saudi Arabia after some Arab rulers normalized their ties with Israel, notwithstanding the seething public anger in their countries. Both the UAE and Saudi Arabia reportedly threatened Pakistan to expel its an estimated 4 million expatriates if Islamabad resisted their pressure to normalize ties with Israel. This followed a few news anchors who were encouraged by Pakistani military to start debating in favor of normalizing ties with Israel, an allegation denied by army known for calling shots in country's foreign policy making. The media outlets in the apartheid state even find it hard to speak with a credible Pakistani journalist.
Many Pakistani journalists would even decline to appear and speak with me, speaking with from our studio in Tel Aviv.
Pakistani journalists who spoke recently with the Israeli news channel are either tainted with the corruption charges or had desperation to come into limelight through controversies. Anyone supporting Israel in Pakistan meets with instant condemnation at social and mainstream media, given Israel's unending mass killing of Palestinians and their forcible expulsion from the Muslim Holy Land from 1948 to onwards. The major thrust of the argument of the lobbies working for Israel and its allies has been to cite Arab countries abandoning Arab nationalism in occupied Palestine for an independent Palestinian state. However, theologists point out that forcing Israel to withdraw from Islamic Holy Land is not an Arab cause, but in fact it is a greater cause of Muslim nationalism beyond color, creed, and geography, something which overwhelmingly prevails in Pakistan. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
In a rare case, the second in Yemen in the past 3 years, a pair of conjoined twins were born in a Sabain hospital in Yemeni capital Sana'a. The two children are in critical condition and need to be treated outside the country, which is impossible due to the continued siege and the closure of Sana'a airport to the Yemenis.
This is a tragedy that children in Yemen suffer as a result of aggression, blockade, and the use of internationally prohibited weapons as well as malnutrition. In the case of the Siamese twins and congenital deformations, the biggest problem is that we cannot send them abroad to have surgery, so their lives are at risk.
The director of the Health Bureau called on the United Nations and the World Health Organization to send a plane to transport the two children or to send a medical team to conduct the surgery inside Yemen, where devastated and under-resourced health services cannot offer any help to these children.
I'm the father of the twins, and their condition is critical, and they need to receive medical care and surgery outside the country because the health situation in Yemen is collapsing, and Sana'a airport is still closed.
Infants suffer a difficult situation in Yemen and the absence of essential medical supplies and healthcare facilities needed for their survival and well-being. Yemen health services have been in a dire situation since the start of the Saudi-led war on the country in 2015. With the fast approaching of the new year, the Sana'a airport remains closed to sick children and women, causing the loss of many lives. The airport is open to United Nations airplanes only. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Local elections in Indian-administered Kashmir held in 8 phases have come to an end. The voting process has remained by and large peaceful amid stringent security measures. After the revocation of Kashmir's special status, regional political parties had refused to participate in the electoral process as a sign of protest against India's decision to strip Kashmir of its autonomous status. That resulted in the strengthening of the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party in the Muslim majority region. However, this time, the regional parties formed an alliance to take part in the local elections. Compared to the past, a large number of people came forth to cast their ballots, and many of them told Press TV that their aim is to keep the BJP away from Kashmir's grassroots.
Since the BJP came to power in India, it started taking decisions against minorities. The BJP has taken Kashmir's autonomy, Kashmiris' jobs, and now they are eyeing land. They don't care about the people of Kashmir. We came to cast our votes against those people who only aim to destroy Kashmir's ethnicity in the name of mainstreaming Kashmir.
More and more people in Kashmir have developed skepticism on the overall electoral process after scores of video interviews of the District Development Council or DDC candidates started circulating on social media. A number of candidates have no idea what positions they are running for in the local administration, and even worse, some have no idea what DDC means.
Kashmir, in order for votes to be equally distributed, the Election Commission has accepted nominations from all sorts of people. There is no set prerequisite for candidates. I wonder who they are empowering. How can an uneducated person with no idea of economy, finance, and politics seek equal rights and development for me? Basically, they do not need educated people. They want stooges who will implement what the Indian government will decide for us without thinking about people's interests.
This is the first time that DDC elections are being held. Members of the DDC are expected to prepare and approve district plans and expenditure schemes, which will replace the district planning and development boards in all districts across the region. Earlier, district development boards looked after the planning, approval, or implementation of centrally sponsored schemes. The result of the 8th phase elections will be announced on December 22nd. Apparently, the elections in Kashmir have paved the way for other electoral processes in the volatile region. However, many say this ballot has made the people of Kashmir politically aware of the fact that New Delhi is trying to thrust such electoral processes in order to create an impression that normalcy has taken hold after it stripped Kashmir of its autonomy, actually without building trust and bridging the gaps. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
The Chinese military on Saturday said it had tailed and monitored a U.S. warship as it passed through the Taiwan Strait. The military said the move deliberately raises the temperature of the Taiwan issue. It said the move jeopardizes peace and stability in the strait. The Chinese military also accused the U.S. of using the Taiwan issue as a pawn for what it called selfish strategic purposes. The U.S. Navy, however, said its guided missile destroyer wasn't a routine mission in accordance with international law. China considers Taiwan as part of its own territory and is opposed to the increasing U.S. support for the island. Last week, the U.S. approved a new major arms sales to Taiwan in a deal worth $280 million. The package is the 6th this year and includes advanced military communications equipment. Washington says the sale aims to improve the security of Taiwan, but some analysts believe the U.S. seeks to push back against China.
The United States doesn't want to create a war over Taiwan, but is trying to push the envelope, is trying to, without breaking the one-China policy, is selling more and more arms to Taiwan as I said, as part of the pushback against China.
Tensions have been simmering between the U.S. and China over other issues as well, from trade to the coronavirus pandemic and political developments in Hong Kong. The U.S. has also prepared a so-called entity list that mainly hits key Chinese industries over what Washington calls ties to China's military. On Thursday, the Pentagon said U.S. warships would be more assertive in responding to what it described as violations of international law. It accused China of being the most pressing long-term strategic threat. In response, China said it seeks no conflict with the U.S. and wants mutual respect and cooperation leading to a win-win outcome.
We hope that the U.S. side will take a rational and objective view of China's development of its national defense and armed forces, work with China to focus on cooperation, manage differences, and bring the China-U.S. relationship back to the right track.
The souring ties between China and the U.S. come in the wake of President Donald Trump's America First policy. With the incoming U.S. President Joe Biden set to take office on January 20th, it remains to be seen how the currently toxic relationship between the world's two biggest economies will look like. Will the new U.S. president stick to Trump's policy tools and continue the frictions? Will he try to de-escalate the tensions, or will he take a more aggressive anti-China approach?
Russian President Vladimir Putin held his annual press conference. This year it was held in a new format, video conferencing, because of pandemic.
The end of a year Q&A session is a rare chance to get President Putin to answer important issues and draw attention to the country's problems. It has long become one of the biggest media events in the country, broadcasted live on main news channels and radio stations in Russia for the whole duration.
Speaking about the new START arms control treaty between Washington and Moscow, Putin accused the U.S. of starting a new arms race. Putin reiterated his call urging Washington to extend the new START arms control treaty for 1 year.
Now there's a threat that strategic arms reduction treaty is terminated. This would mean that there are no more restrictions on the arms race. None at all. We have called and continue to call on our Western partners to extend this treaty for at least a year. During this year, we would have substantive talks, as diplomats say, on what to do next and how to live on.
Putin said he believed U.S. President-elect Joe Biden is open to dialogue on the issue, but added Russia needs some reaction from the U.S.
That it is the last point that connects Russian Federation with the United States on strategic issues, because all other treaties and agreements signed by Soviet Union, Russian Federation and the United States were dismissed, were destroyed by administration of Trump. Now we are entering a new period of development in American policy. That's why we hope that previous all agreements and treaties will be respected.
The new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, also known as START, is the last remaining agreement that maintains a nuclear balance between the two countries. Putin also said that the unfounded poisoning scenario of opposition politician Alexei Navalny was in fact part of the US-backed plot repeated by media to try to discredit the Russian leader. He stressed that Navalny was not important enough to be a target. Navalny, 44, was taken ill on a domestic flight on August 20. He was later transported to the German capital. German doctors, however, claimed Navalny had been poisoned with a substance from the group of cholinesterase inhibitors. Since then, Germany and other Western governments have been attacking Russia with accusations that it poisoned Navalny. Moscow has repeatedly and strongly rejected the allegation. Marina Kotanova, Moscow.
Before entering his latest and perhaps last round of negotiations with UK counterparts, the EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, addressed the European Parliament early on Friday morning.
Nous sommes à un moment de vérité.
It is the moment of truth.
Il nous reste...
We have very little time remaining, just a few hours to work through these negotiations in a useful fashion if we want this agreement to enter into force on the 1st of January.
There are less than 2 weeks to go before Britain might crash out of the Brexit transition period without a crucial EU trade deal.
Shameful UK government strategy.
Some EU lawmakers are in no doubt as to which side is to blame for the deadlock.
The UK government is taking endless time to realise that some illusions of Brexit simply cannot be delivered.
Many legislators claim the UK faces financial ruin if Boris Johnson's government fails to reach an agreement with the EU. Meanwhile, the Scottish National Party is waiting in the wings to call a second independence referendum that could very well see the breakup of the United Kingdom. It has been pointed out that long delays can already be witnessed at EU-UK border crossings.
Dear British friends, is this what you voted for? Passport stamps and lorry queues? This moment is a victory for Europe.
But the European Union is in no position to gloat, it has been argued.
The real division isn't between the EU and the UK. It's between the haves and the have-nots. And we start dealing with that or there'll be a lot more Brexits to come.
Deal or no deal, business groups say the EU needs to pursue major structural reforms, especially in the context of Brexit.
There's a mismatch clearly, so we need better mobility. We need to be able to match the supply with the demand for workers across Europe, not just within member states.
Fishing rights remain the major sticking point in the negotiations. One EU lawmaker has reminded Boris Johnson that his closest ally will soon be history. The COVID-19 pandemic is still here, and so he should choose his next moves carefully. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids? That is, from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. And in this program, we're going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise the children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Rai Shahri. And we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear sister.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So, in our previous discussions, we have been talking about self-esteem, which is a very important and crucial topic, and unfortunately, sometimes we tend to neglect it, especially with our children who are young, because we feel at that time they don't really need that respect, or, you know, but we don't know that it is from a young age that if these things are instilled, then when they grow up, they will become much stronger and better. And so we have been talking a lot about this, and we spoke at the end about the do's and don'ts, and how we want this will affect the child's, you know, upbringing and increase their self-esteem.
Yeah, some do's and don'ts practical we should apply so as to enhance the self-esteem.
Yes,
and some
exactly.
don'ts so that the self-esteem cannot go away, it can stay, right? Uh-huh. So one of the that we talked about was do give the child
duties.
Responsibility. It's okay. Very important. And then another do is do talk to them about the major changes and decisions of the family. For example, if you're supposed to shift from one house to another, or for example, if there's a decision of some people coming to live over your home,
yeah.
you know, for some time, your relatives, so talk to him about it beforehand.
Exactly.
That, you know, he should be prepared mentally. Don't let him feel surprised.
That, oh, somebody
just,
come.
Yeah, dragged along the scenes. No, he should feel that these things are worthy to be discussed and they have considered me as part of the family.
Yeah.
A child is smart enough to feel that, even if he can't express that.
Mm.
But he knows that he's considered important.
So unless you want to surprise them.
Yeah, unless you want to surprise them, for example, their birthday parties, which they would be very enthusiastic of. But no, here we are talking about